This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
A brain injury can have a huge impact on a person's life, both physically and emotionally. Today we're exploring the psychological impact people may experience. When a person has psychological input, what does it mean? Today I'm so grateful to be joined by neuropsychologist Dr. Christine Canty. Welcome, Christine, and thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
So firstly, first question, what is a neuropsychologist?
Great question. So a neuropsychologist is somebody who understands the relationship between brains and behaviour. So it's all of the things that come under that, including thinking, like cognition, memory, attention, but also feeling, emotions, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Basically, my job is to try and help the person themselves understand that, but also their teams working with them and their families, and ideally try and find some strategies and ways to help help improve things.
Excellent. What is the difference between a psychologist and a neuropsychologist?
So a psychologist is somebody who is trained to understand sort of psychology more broadly, so understanding the more broad sort of psychological functions, so how we understand ourselves, how we relate to other people. Yep. Neuropsychologists focus specifically on the role of brain disorders. So most neuropsychologists would be working with people who've had some sort of acquired brain impairment, things like traumatic brain injury or stroke or dementia would probably be some of the top three.
Yeah. Huh, interesting. What is the difference between a psychologist and a psychiatrist?
Another great question. So a psychologist is somebody who has done a training in sort of behavioural science and then specialised in psychology. Yeah. And a psychiatrist is somebody who is trained as a medical doctor and then goes on to train in psychiatry, which means that they look more at disorders that can be treated with medications. And so they're looking generally at, they certainly are treating psychological disorders, but within a sort of more medical framework.
Right. Interesting. Thank you. I've learned something new today myself. So how many years do you train to become a neuropsychologist?
It can vary a little bit. I did 8 years. So I did took me a lot longer than 8 years, but technically it's 8 years.
Yeah.
So I did a 4-year degree with honours. That was a Bachelor of Behavioural Science. And then I did a combined PhD and a Master's in Clinical Neuropsychology, which is supposed to take 4 years, but I had kids along the way and it took me quite a bit longer than that. But essentially you need an undergraduate degree and then a specialisation. So for a Master's, which would be a minimum of 6 years.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Impressive. Psychology can play an integral part in brain injury recovery. Every brain injury is different, so I imagine that the psychological impact varies with each person. What are the main areas that you focus on?
So I guess as a neuropsychologist, the main area that I focus on is cognition, which basically means thinking skills.
Yep.
So it's things like how somebody is able to make memories or how they're able to pay attention and concentrate on something, how they're able to communicate, problem solve, reason, and how all of those things relate to their day-to-day life. But it also includes the neuropsychological side of things, also includes the brain stuff, but also the psychological side. So things like self-concept and how somebody's, how their feelings are and whether they're able to regulate their feelings and how that's sort of coming across in their behaviour and affecting their ability to do all their day-to-day functions.
Right. Oh, interesting. If someone feels they could benefit from psychological support, how would they go about accessing it?
Yeah, so it varies a little bit on if people are under ACC, then they can generally access psychology through there. So if they wanted to see a clinical psychologist to talk a little bit more about how they're feeling, so things like mood or anxiety or things like that, they could do that, and then they basically just need to speak to their recovery partner to organise that and to request that.
Yeah.
Or if they wanted to have a bit more of an assessment of how their thinking was going and find out exactly what's going on there and get some strategies to manage that, then they'd be best to see a neuropsychologist, and again, speaking to their recovery partner would be a good way to organise that. For people not under ACC, to see a clinical psychologist, so someone to help with feelings and other kind of psychological functions. The best thing is to speak to your GP because there are 6 funded sessions that you can get through brief intervention counselling.
Great.
Brief intervention support, it's called. But there's also private clinical psychologists that you could just kind of do a Google and find people around Dunedin who you could see for that as well. Yep. And you could also get a neuropsychological assessment that way privately. There are limited ways to access a neuropsychological assessment if you're not under ACC through Te Whatu Ora. Would be if you're under a community rehabilitation team or being seen by a neurologist. That would be the avenue through that way.
So lots of ways. I think if someone was interested, we will have some links on our website for this podcast, so you can, or you can give us a call if you're wanting to find out more information about that. What does a neuropsych assessment involve? So if someone was coming to see you for a neuropsych.
So a neuropsych assessment is, I see people as an inpatient, and there I do quite sort of briefer assessments. But, for example, via ACC, or if I was seeing someone further down the track of their injury, then I'd be looking to do a really comprehensive assessment. So it's actually quite a big whack of time that it takes, because the human brain and mind is very complex. And we have a bunch of tests that we use to try and look at various different functions, but they're not perfect. You know, they can only kind of tell us, they can give us an example of how that person can use that particular cognitive skill on that day, in that moment. So we try and use a lot of different tests so that we can see patterns in how that's coming across in the different tests that we do. And, of course, each test that we do tests multiple different things. You know, you can't you can't sort of pick out one thing entirely. So an assessment generally involves coming in to see your neuropsychologist. We'd start with an interview where I would ask lots of questions about how things are going for you. So I generally tell people when I start, this is a collaborative process. So I'm going to bring my knowledge of brains and my knowledge of cognition, and you're going to bring your knowledge of you. And then we're going to put those two things together and try and work out how this is kind of going on for you, and what we can do to help you kind of move forwards. So we start with the interview and ask lots of questions about background stuff, so I can get an idea of how things that have been going before any brain injury, and then look at how things are going day to day. So are you having problems with your memory? Are you finding it hard to concentrate? When does that happen? When does it not happen? When is it worse? All those kinds of things.
Yep.
And then we look at the assessment, kind of cognitive assessment side of things. So that's where we do a whole lot of different tests. That side of things usually takes a good 4, sometimes 5 hours.
Wow.
So it is a big, big piece of work. It's very rare that I would do that in one go. There's not many people who would be able to do that in one go, even regardless of a brain injury. Yeah. It's quite taxing. And so usually we would try and do that at least over a couple of sessions, sometimes multiple sessions if people are earlier on and really struggling with their fatigue. And then once we've got all that data, I'd be then starting to put it all together. Again, I'm looking for patterns and looking to see what brain function is underlying where things are tending to fall down.
Yep.
And then I'm looking at, well, what are the brain functions that are doing well? And then take that away and try and put it back into that person's life. And we have a feedback session and go, okay, here are the things where things are not going so well. These are your weaknesses. So we want to try and avoid doing things like this. Yep. And in all the stuff you told me at the start, that's going to look like this, and go through how that comes across practically. And then look at, okay, well, here are your strengths. So this is, you know, when you're doing this particular thing, let's try and do it this way and play to your strengths and work out a plan, and ideally some nice kind of concrete strategies for the person to take away with them.
Oh, cool. Awesome. Thank you. One of the things you mentioned there in the about length of of the assessments was fatigue. And last year I was lucky enough to hear you speak about fatigue and fatigue management at our seminar, Brain Injury Otago seminar. I really enjoyed your talk last year and some of the analogies you used to describe fatigue and fatigue management. Mm-hmm. And I was really hoping that we could go through those today. So I know you talked about brain buckets. Are mm-hmm. you able to go over that?
Yep, absolutely. So the brain bucket is an analogy that I use often with people with brain injury, but it's relevant for anybody, right. regardless of that. So I think of the brain bucket as the space you have in your brain or your mind at any one time to do all of the different things that your brain does.
Yep.
And often I would sort of draw this out for people in a sort of, you know, physical picture so that it makes it a little bit easier to conceptualise. But generally I would sort of draw first of all, okay, well, let's think about your brain bucket before you had the brain injury. What are all the things that you'd be doing? And so, for example, if I think about my own brain bucket right mm-hmm. now, yep. I've got a little part of my brain that's keeping me alive and doing all my regular kind of bodily functions that I'm paying no attention to. That's just happening in the background, but it's still taking up space. Yep. My brain is processing vision because I'm looking at you and looking at everything around me. My brain is processing hearing, so I'm listening to you, but then I'm also using the language center of my brain to listen to what you're saying. And I'm also using my social cognition because I'm looking to see whether you're smiling and nodding and whether I'm on the right track or if you want me to stop talking or talk more. I'm also using a monitoring part of my brain. So I'm looking at the big picture and thinking about what I'm saying and trying to plan what I'm saying. Yep. So all of these things are different parts of your brain that are working to give you that particular function. And each one of those takes up a certain amount of space. And so if right now I was to finish talking and you were to turn to me and give me a really tricky question, then hopefully, all going well, I would have the brain space to be able to go, okay, I really need to think about that. I need to plan. I need to reason. I need to problem solve. It's kind of like having a bit of whiteboard space. You know, yep. you've got some space to really sort of marshal your resources because there's space left in the brain bucket. Now, after a brain injury, things are a little bit different. So the first thing that's different is, depending on the kind of brain injury that you have had, but pretty much for all brain injuries, there is going to be a certain amount of brain that is going to be affected by the injury. That's the definition, right? Yep. And so there's going to be a little bit of space taken up in the bottom of the brain bucket that is space that you had there previously, but that now has been taken out because of the brain injury. Yep. So you've got a little bit less space to start with. But then the next thing that happens is that your brain is now working on all these other functions with the brain injury on top of that. So, for example, lots of people have their visual functions affected by brain injury to varying extents, right? So in concussion, often people have that real light sensitivity. And so their vision might be fine. They're still able to use their vision, but might take up a bit more brain processing than previously and therefore takes up a little bit more space in the bucket. So again, if that were me sitting here now, just sitting here having my eyes open with some fluorescent lights above us would be taking up more space in my brain bucket than what it did previously. And then depending on what's affected by your brain injury, so another thing that's often affected is speed of thinking. So if that was me, then just listening to what you're saying and formulating my response, I would still be able to do both of those things. But to try and do that quickly would be taking up more brain space. Working memory is another one. Holding information in mind is often something that is harder for people after a brain injury. So just listening to your questions and then holding that in mind while I try and think of my response is going to take up more space after brain injury. And so when you start to add those things and realize that each one of those takes up more space, you realize that you're getting toward the point where there's not much space left in the brain bucket. And then often the kicker for people is fatigue. So I've already done a neuropsychology assessment this morning with somebody. So I've been working for about 4 hours, and that's, I'm feeling not too bad at the moment. But if I had a brain injury and was and had a lot of fatigue that I was managing, that would mean that there's a whole lot of fatigue sitting in my brain bucket where everything becomes less efficient.
Yeah.
And if that fatigue gets in there, that means that then once we add all those things up, the amount of space is very little that's left. And so if you were to then ask me that really tricky question, I might really fumble my words, or I might just not be able to sort of do that at all. I might then get really upset and not have any brain space to manage my emotions after that and burst into tears. And you're probably listening to this thinking that that kind of happens to everyone when there's lots of stuff going on in their brain bucket. And it absolutely does. If you're fatigued, or if there's you're really stressed, or there's a lot of stuff going on, then you might make cognitive errors, or you might be very emotional. And that absolutely happens. But it's just so much more fine-tuned and so much easier to happen after a brain injury.
Yeah, your bucket's going to fill up a lot quicker.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think a really important part of it is thinking, what's in your bucket? That's one of the really nice strategies that comes from this. So, again, for example, if I was somebody sitting here with a brain injury that affected my visual function, but I don't actually need my vision to listen to you. So what I could be doing is just closing my eyes and kind of concentrating on what you're saying when you're talking to me, so that I could then just sort of reduce, take away vision out of my brain bucket and just use the space that's there to
Listen to those tricky questions. To be able to listen.
Yeah, that's right. I don't know if you've ever gone to turn the radio down in your car when you've gone to do a reverse park because you think, like, hang on, I need to kind of focus. And that's why you're taking that out of your brain bucket so that you can focus on the task at hand.
Yeah, no, that makes so much sense. You also talked about the fuel tank. Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah. So that's the other analogy that I like to use is the analogy of the fuel tank. It's kind of similar-ish to the brain bucket, but it's a bit different. The fuel tank is the energy that you have, that your brain has, I guess, your brain and your body, to get through any particular day. And so after all those things that we've just talked about, if your brain's, you know, taking a whole lot more space to process vision or to think quickly or to use your working memory, you're going to drain your fuel tank so much more quickly because it's just more inefficient, I guess, to be able to use those skills. And so you're going to drain your fuel tank quickly. When you get to an empty fuel tank, we all know that feeling, right? We all know the feeling of when you've just had a horrible week, you've had a bad night's sleep, you're starting to come down with a cold, and, you know, you've had a full day at work and you get home and your partner says to you, oh, we really need to think about our taxes. And you're just like, absolutely not. This is like, I've got no brain space for that right now. Just, I can't do it. And then you say, I just need to crawl into bed. That's all I've got. So we all kind of know that feeling. But the thing that people often experience post a brain injury is this concept of fatigue, of neurogenic fatigue.
Yeah.
And a big reason for that is because in addition to all the things that you're doing throughout your day, all those cognitive functions, your brain has got an extra job. It's got to try and clean up the mess of the brain injury. If you're pretty early on, it's still cleaning up things like blood or cells that have died as part of the brain injury. So your brain's working for that. But it's also trying to repair.
Yeah.
It's trying to spend energy repairing this. And this is why often the concept of neurogenic fatigue can be really tricky to get your head around, because often people say, all I did was got up and I had a shower and I'm exhausted. I did nothing. But it's not. Your brain's running a marathon in the background, and that's why you're so fatigued. But the key concept of the fuel tank is that if you're sitting in the top half of the fuel tank, so say you've got up in the morning, you've had your shower, you've had a good night's sleep, so you started with a nice full fuel tank, and then you've just done a few things, and you're sort of sitting in, say, the top half of the fuel tank. If you can picture, you know, the fuel tank in your car, there's your sort of indicators sitting, you know, maybe it's a three-quarter point. Then what your brain does is it makes automatic decisions all the time based on how much energy you've got. And when I say decisions, I'm talking about physiological decisions. So your brain is deciding where to put its energy and yep. what sort of things to do. So if you're sitting in the top half of the fuel tank, your brain is going, okay, well, I can do this next thing, this task, whatever you're giving me to do. And that could be anything from eating your breakfast to doing a crossword puzzle to doing a neuropsych assessment. And at the same time, I can give some energy to that task, and I can also do some repair work in the background because I know that I've got enough energy in the fuel tank to do both of those things. Yep. But once you get past about halfway, so say you've done a couple of those tasks and you're not exhausted, that's empty. You're not at empty. Maybe you're at about halfway. You might start to feel a tiny bit fatigued, but you're okay. You're thinking, I could sort of push on. But what your brain decides is, okay, now I can't do both those things anymore. I can do either. I can either do the task or I can do the repair work. So if you go and have a rest right at that point, you can do the repair work. But if you push through and do the task, your brain will let you do the task. You will keep on going doing that, but it will shut down the repair work. And this is the concept that's really important in terms of fatigue management. Certainly in the first 6 months after brain injury, it's really crucial for getting a good recovery. But even sometimes 10 years on, even forever and a day, it's still a really important way of managing that fatigue. Because if you can rest when you're at the halfway mark, rather, then your brain has got energy to be able to build new connections, and building new connections is how your brain recovers.
Yeah. Amazing. When you're talking about fatigue management, can you relate those to other chronic illnesses other than a brain injury?
Yeah, absolutely. In brain injury, the crucial thing is the building of the new connections. But in other kind of disorders, often people have fatigue and other kind of illnesses and a range of different things. And it sort of really comes down to efficiency, I think. Once you sort of start getting to the point where your energy starts running low, then you're taking a lot more energy to be able to do the things that you were doing, but you're also taking away any capacity that your brain or your body has got for restorative action, for keeping you more well. Mm-hmm. You sort of end up burning the candle at both ends. And I know myself, for example, when I was post-COVID, I was thinking to myself, okay, right, I've got to walk the walk here and do, what I'm telling everybody else to do and to do a little bit of work when I'm trying to get back into things, but then go and have a rest for 15 minutes and just, manage it so that I'm not bringing it down to the bottom of the fuel tank all of the time and sort of running myself into the ground, but so that I'm managing that and getting that nice kind of balance. Mm. So I think it's certainly something an idea that I use just for myself in day to day, but I think it's relevant to a whole lot of people, but particularly brain injury.
Yeah. And I think we often feel like we can push through, and it's so important to understand that we don't have to, and the reasons behind it are so important for ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that kind of visual of knowing that, you can push through, but it means that your brain won't have the energy. And I think the nice thing about that too is that sometimes you might make a decision to push through. You might sort of think, well, look, it's my sister's wedding. Yeah. And if I go to this wedding, I know that by the end of the night, I'm going to be exhausted. I'm going to be at the end of the fuel tank. So are you going to just go to the ceremony and then go home and have a rest? Absolutely not. No. You're going to go to the ceremony and you're going to go to the wedding and you are going to get right to the absolute bottom of your fuel tank because it's absolutely worth it.
Yeah.
But then you're going to know that I'm not going to schedule any appointments or anything for the next kind of day, couple of days. Yeah. I'm going to absolutely recover and just rest as much as I can, and it's going to be absolutely worth it. But that most of the time I'm going to try and manage the fuel tank really nicely.
Yeah.
And when I don't, I'm going to do it mindfully so that I know that that's what I'm doing and I'm going to prepare for it by resting beforehand and resting afterwards.
Yeah, that's cool. Putting your priorities first, making the important things are worth lowering your fuel tank for.
Exactly. Yeah? And that's where the psychological aspect of neuropsychology, you know, if you're living your life strictly by managing the fuel tank and not doing anything that feels good, you know, then you're not going to feel very good about yourself and your mood starts to feel low. So it's important to have those things that help you to feel good and help you to keep your mood well managed, but that also balance that brain injury recovery as well.
Yeah. Awesome. So about balance, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. For coming in talking to me today, Christine. I really appreciate you coming in, and I'm really looking forward to you hearing you speak at our next brain injury seminar, which is in July, 28th of July. So, yeah, looking forward to that. If you want to find out more about Brain Injury Otago or our brain injury seminar and come and listen to Christine talk, again, contact us on 4716 156 or check out our website, braininjuryotago.org.nz.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.